Hello, and welcome to the Indie Film Review with me, Dan. I'm hosting this time, and then Jared is co-hosting.
I'm a co-host!
That's how it goes, right? Co-host is worse than the host?
This is how a co-host sounds like. I'm here to do it.
Oh, I've been doing it wrong? I've been doing it wrong for 92 episodes.
That's right. I'm just a simple,
Barney
simple
Fife.
Guy, you know. Trying to uphold the law.
Jesus Christ.
That's done. I'm done doing that.
All right.
Anyways,
so, Jared, what do we do here?
We like to review independent films, Dan. And we like to do them in a critical manner with our eyes, critically, and our ears.
Silly, funny way with our hearts.
Yeah. So, like, we take the film very seriously, but we're both doofuses. So that comes out, and hopefully that's fun.
And this is the first time that we, on this show, have reviewed a documentary. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this documentary called Tread is batshit insane. I recommend everybody watch it right now. I'm going to be very critical of it, but the story this fucking movie tells is out of this world.
Director and writer... go ahead. I'm sorry.
I remember reading about this on a Cracked article maybe 6 years ago, and then it slipped my mind. I never thought about it again, and then I'm like, oh shit, this is that fucking story I was reading, and then it shows. Oh my god.
Oh hey Dan, what? Do you remember when Cracked was good?
Yes, I do remember when Cracked was good.
Yeah, wow. Remember when Cracked.com was like a good website to go to?
I do. 6 years ago, whenever I read this article.
And then they fired like all of their writers there, and they're like, now what do we do? I don't even know what that site is anymore. Anyways, now that we're done shit-talking Cracked.com. So, Dan, Tread 2020. This was written and directed by Paul Solette. S-O-L-E-T.
You say and, it like in French.
Solette. And, what's this film about, Dan?
This film, okay, there's a man named, what's his name?
Marv,
like,
Yeemeyer.
Basically, this guy, he comes out of the military, he's really great at welding, and he starts his own muffler shop in Colorado. He just moves to Colorado, and he wants to live there. But he moves in this really kind of remote place in Colorado.
Yeah.
And it's kind of operated by local government. And you can tell, like, the local government is definitely good old boys and things like that. Mm-hmm. And basically, he buys this land for his muffler shop that somebody else wanted but couldn't afford. And they start fucking him over systematically. But the problem is, this guy has a few screws loose.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
he is very mentally unstable. And he goes on a fucking rampage as things build up and build up and build up.
So there are there's two sides to this, right?
Yes. And I like how both sides are very much neutral. Like, it could be his fault and it could be their fault. You don't fucking know.
If you go and look at the reviews for this movie, everyone is on Marvin's side.
But
they're like, Marv was tricked. They're like, we know about these small towns and they fucking
okay, so you need to understand going into this film that the whole narration is taking place because his friend told him to make this manifesto on tape. So you get these fervent bits of dialogue, or not dialogue, monologue, that are just him going fucking crazier and crazier and crazier. And you, like, if you are on his side, you are kind of failing to see how crazy he's becoming.
Yeah. It's pretty fascinating that he recorded all this, and it really makes the documentary work. Dan, questions. How do you feel about actors reenacting scenes
now,
in documentaries?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the first thing I was going to bring up too.
Yep.
There is a film called The Thin Blue Line, and it's directed by Errol Morris. It's about a guy who was wrongly convicted of killing a cop and goes to jail for a long time, and then years later in the 12 years later or something like that, he gets exonerated because the guy who actually killed the cop confesses, sort of. But it's because of this documentary, The Thin Blue Line, that this guy gets off. Because he looks into it. Yeah, I recommend it 100%. It's called The Thin Blue Line. But in this documentary, Errol Morris makes avant-garde reenactments. And I feel like this film was taking a lot of cues because it felt like very similar pacing to The Thin Blue Line. So the film was definitely taking a lot of cues from The Thin Blue Line. But the reenactments in this film were so just blah. And that's where I'm going to be critical with it because... It was boring. Like, all the reenactments were boring, especially because they mentioned that he's a great welder, and they use the same goddamn welding scene every single time that they want to show welding.
Not enough B-roll in that welder.
Exactly. And like I said, with documentary, if you have reenactments, I'd rather see creative and innovative reenactments rather than like, let's film exactly what happened.
So I'll say I was... okay with the reenactments up until the weird CGI stuff. That stuff kind of like took me out of it. You're right, it kind of did stall sometimes, especially because like he would repeat dialogue from the tapes and they would show you the same scenes, so that if you're watching this film and you're kind of sleepy, you're gonna fall asleep. That's what I'll say. But you know, I was like, on saying that, I was very intrigued by the story itself. That's really what
the film tells.
Going.
An amazing story. Like the narrative behind this documentary, the story that this what was his name,
Paul Sole.
The story Sole. That Sole tells or helps Marv tell is absolutely fascinating, and the fact that he's able to tell it and maintain an objectivity on both sides is very impressive.
Yeah, because like the first section of this movie is Marv's perspective on how the town screwed him over and why it makes sense that it led to him being this crazy and like,
and he keeps
taking
saying
revenge
that God,
on the town.
God has blessed me to do this.
Oh my God.
Like, that is your first clue that this guy is crazy.
His warped sense of justice, where he's like, God gave me this idea. He's allowing me to do this. I'm going to go and build this tank bulldozer and destroy this town.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say that during the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. We buried the lead so hard. I mean, so that's basically what he does.
He buys a bulldozer for no reason at one point. Like, absolutely no reason he buys a bulldozer.
But there is a reason. All this is premeditated. I don't give a shit what he says. He's doing this all on purpose.
Right. So because he's a welder, he reinforces this bulldozer with, like, 2-inch thick beams of steel. And in between the beams of steel, he pours concrete. So you cannot penetrate this fucking thing.
50 cals bounced right off of it. It's a tank.
Yeah.
He made a super enforced tank bulldozer.
That he put a hole for a 50 cal rifle in it.
Yeah.
And he shot out of it.
Yeah. And it's impenetrable. They couldn't take care of it with normal police gear or any of that stuff. Like, nothing could stop it. So basically the whole town just kind of watched him destroy all the buildings. Anyone that he had... You know what's interesting, too?
What?
Because at first I was kind of like, you know, screw Marv, whatever. But the sheriffs and everybody knew where he was going before he got there. So it's almost like all the people that wronged him knew that they wronged him.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, they're coming for me next. We better go warn those people. So that kind of was like, wait a minute.
And they knew who was in it, too.
Wait a minute.
It could have been
anybody. As soon as
they assume it's him, they're like, oh shit, like, he's definitely...
Here's all the people he's gonna hurt. Like town hall and all this other shit. But I mean, it certainly doesn't make him innocent in any respect, because the film also paints him as like, he could have fixed a lot of the problems that he had. And I mean, from the other perspective, they're saying like, he had a sewage line problem, right? Where it's like, if he just hooks up the sewage, then
the property
would be fine. Go ahead.
Let's just get into spoilers now, because
I know, right?
It seems like
we're already in spoilers.
So the initial problem was he bought this land before this other guy could get it. And then in order...
At an auction,
like, order, yeah, at an auction. So to screw him over, or what he perceived as being screwed over, was he, in order to maintain a business there, had to hook up to the sewer line, which was 400 yards away. And to do that, it was going to cost him about $400,000. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous. But they kept threatening him to, like, you know, we're going to shut down your business if you don't comply by the city rules.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, it was like 80 grand, but that was, he only paid like 30 grand for the land.
Right.
So that was his reasoning. But what they were saying is they would have helped him hook it up for free as long as he, like, there was like one condition. It was like a very easy, simple condition, because when eventually someone else gets the land, they hooked up the sewage that day. Yeah. Like the same day they got it, they hooked up the dang sewage. And it's like, and he also resold the land for $400,000, what you were saying.
Yeah.
And initially, he tries to sell his land for $250,000, and the buyers are like, okay, we'll buy it. And he goes, oh, no, never mind. I want $375,000. And they're like, okay, we'll take that. And then he upped it again. Yeah. So it's like he just keep. And it was only because he hated these concrete guys.
Yeah.
The dudes that lived next door.
The people initially wanted the original land. The Duchette. Yeah.
The Duchess. So how did you feel? Maybe we can go back to questions just briefly. How did you feel about the construction of the documentary in terms of camera work? And then my second part would be like in terms of keeping your attention.
Well, to me, I felt like what bias isn't the right word to use, but like I was already kind of initially engaged because I had already read that article. I'm like, ooh, I want to watch it. So I was already very interested in what I was watching. But like I kind of, going back to what I was saying about the Thin Blue Line is an excellent documentary because it's super engaging with the reenactments. This one, not so much. The things like Grizzly Man are really engaging because Werner Herzog always chooses really crazy topics. But this, I mean, it's a crazy topic, but it kind of does have a slow start. I will say that.
I felt like they focused on the wrong things at times because
I agree with that.
In this movie, they take so much time building up Marv and then showing the other side. So like the first two parts are good. And then the third part is like kind of, we're like rehashing things or like nothing's really going on. And then the last part is the act of the bulldozer coming out and destroying stuff. I wanted to know the aftermath. I wanted to know what happened after. How did this affect the town?
And even
what happened to all these characters?
See, I completely
and
agree
we don't
with
learn
you.
Any of that.
I completely
and
agree
I'm like,
with you.
What the fuck?
I completely agree with you. Now, here's where the film is kind of hypocritical in that regard.
Sure.
At the very end, there's a title card that says, this happened on June 6th, 2004. And the next day, June 7th, Ronald Reagan died and everybody forgot about it. And well, it's like, well, the film itself fucking forgot about all the families that were affected by this.
Yeah, wow. Major burn, Dan. That was, yes, absolutely. Yeah, there was a weird, there's a, strange. I mean, you want to try to keep your bias out of doing a film like this. I mean, it depends. Certain documentaries definitely have a bias of like what they want you to see. And then there's more of like the objective point of view.
You telling me that a lot of people are on Marv's side kind of pisses me off because that tells me that they are unable to think for themselves.
I mean, Marv is clearly deranged.
Clearly. Like,
and he's
upsettingly
taken,
deranged.
And I'm not sure if I said this before, but he's taken things like God's will. It was God, like God, like helped me get this idea and whatever, whatever. But if he's a Christian or whatever belief he has with God, usually I'm pretty sure somewhere in there it says to like not covet thy neighbor's stuff or try to kill them. You know, like a lot of the things that
in his
you know people try
tape.
To follow in these religions. So it's so hypocritical and annoying to me that people use that as an excuse to do bad things when
he
just wanted
to. In his manifesto tape, to clarify what Jared's talking about, like, he keeps bringing up God. He keeps bringing up God. He's like, God wouldn't have God wouldn't have let this happen. Like, they came in and inspected the building, and they didn't even see it. That was God's will. It's like, oh my God, dude. Like,
you're such a fucking insane. He's like, when I was auctioning off all my stuff, no one bought the bulldozer, so that means that God wanted me to reinforce this bulldozer. It's like, go fuck yourself, Marv, you piece of shit. Why don't you go snowmobile off a cliff?
I felt so bad for his fucking girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's the one that I feel the most for, because she had nothing to do with this, and she actually really loved him, and, you know, he just completely kept his business away from his personal life, basically.
I mean, there was way more than her smoking, because, like, they broke up because she was secretly smoking. Like, that was one thing. But it feels like Marv knew he was going to do this for so long.
Because
there's this, like, hot tub scene where he's talking about, like, where he thinks, like, everyone in the town has screwed him over out of money. He did this lawsuit that cost him $150,000. He didn't need to do the lawsuit at all. It was totally fucking pointless. He was given so many outs and so many times where he could have stopped the madness. And out of principle, because he was... Entitlement is basically the best word. He felt entitled to get things his way, regardless of if it was the correct way or if it was the most beneficial way to him. And it's just like, he's such a prick. So I feel like he pushed away his girlfriend on purpose. He's a terrible human being. And I get how people are saying, like, in these reviews, they're like, well, small towns, you know, if there's like a small town city council, they're all buddy-buddy.
Yeah,
and you're the new guy in town, they're going to bully you. I can definitely see that scenario happening.
Well, no, okay, so the ones that own the town, the Thompson brothers.
Yes.
Anytime that they're on camera talking, you can tell they're, like, they talk over each other, they're fucking lying. Like, they definitely had some kind of ill will towards this guy.
Uh-huh.
But to take it to the extreme that he takes it is a bit ridiculous. But listening to the people talk, like, the newspaper guy, I liked him. He was believable. But the Duchette, who was the one that, like, hated him from the get-go because he bought the land that he wanted, and the Thompson brothers, who owned the whole town, like, the fucking millionaires, but have the good working mentality. Those guys are, you know, they can be called into question, too.
Yeah. Oh, like Cody Duchef, the guy who owns the concrete stuff. Yeah. I know for sure that dude probably tried to screw over Marvin, because they say he's a hothead. They say he's like a jerk. And so he's at that auction. And according to Marv is like, I bought that land. We were in a bidding war with Cody Duchef and me. I eventually got it because they didn't want to go any higher than $30,000. And then after the auction, Cody approaches him and yells at him for 10 minutes about, like, that should have been for me, blah, blah, blah. But then when they interview Cody and his friend, they said that never happened. We never talked to him. I don't fucking believe that. Exactly. I definitely don't believe that. They are so full of shit.
Well, because nobody wants to take responsibility for, you know, the happening, because they feel like if they do admit to it, then it's going to look bad on them. So I understand why they don't want to do it in the documentary. But at the same time, you know, nobody is responsible for this except for Marv. Like, have to understand that.
Yeah, even if the town screwed him over,
it's still his fucking fault.
Yes, his vigilante justice bullshit that he tried to pull.
He did
and destroyed this whole town. In the long run, he probably did the exact opposite, because I would think that this would build tourism through the roof. Like, people would want to come to the town that this maniac fucking bulldozed. But apparently they did destroy the bulldozer. But did they rebuild it for the documentary? Because there were some shots where I was like, this seems like they actually remade the bulldozer. Shot
of a bulldozer. I think they rebuilt a replica of it, but not the same one. So this film definitely probably had a budget, but, like,
that's some money. Yeah.
It was a documentary that, like, I don't know. To me, it was just too good to pass up. A couple of really cool... Well, okay. Two notes that I wanted to get on was this construction of this machine that he drives. He knew that he was going to have debris falling on him, so he built air compressors to blow the debris off of it so he can see.
Yes.
Because how he built it is, you can't see out of it, but he built cameras into the steel.
Yes.
So he has monitors on the inside of this fucking bulldozer.
Why don't they shoot the cameras? It's the weak point of the monster.
Exactly.
Come on. But if this was a Zelda game.
There's another just... I was speechless at this part. It scared the shit out of me. Because okay. I had never seen the news footage. But there's a point where he's shooting his 50 cal that he mounted to the tank at propane tanks. And there's a shitload of them. And they're huge. And there's neighborhoods around this. Mm-hmm. Like, if he but hit here, anything, he would have leveled a whole section of the city and people would have died. Like,
but from what I know about propane tanks, they are supposed to be designed to not explode.
Really?
But he thought so far ahead that he was using incendiary rounds, is what they said in the documentary.
Yeah.
So that probably would have ignited the propane through.
If you watch it, like, because at one point, like, something falls on the in front of the rifle and he's shooting at it and he can't shoot out. You can see that it's definitely incendiary rounds because, like, flames
They're
pop
burning.
Out.
Yeah. It's, jeez. So he was so obsessed by thinking about how he's going to do this that he put grease all over.
Yeah, so people couldn't climb on it.
The tank, because there's a ridiculous, like, this could be made into an actual film.
It could
like, instead
be.
Of a documentary, and
I would
love
like to
it.
See that, actually.
Where Cody Duchev, this old man, is climbing, he's like, I'll get you, Marv, I'll get you! It's like the fucking end of fucking Animal House or something. He's clambering up the tank and slipping off of it, because there's grease all over it. It's like, what is going on? It's like fucking Home Alone esque pranks he's pulling, and thank God he didn't kill anyone. Right? I don't know if the movie ever says.
No, it doesn't say.
I don't think so.
I think
he
if
just
he
destroys
hit the
a lot
tanks,
of property.
Though, he definitely would have killed people.
Yeah. There was a lot of people living around that area. Marv, you piece of shit.
Jaren, how do you feel about snowmobiling?
Not my bearing. You know, it's like a cool, fun thing, you know? And like, all Marv wanted to do was snowmobile, and
that's why he moved to Colorado in the first place.
Because that was like his big hobby. But he had the money. Like, he could have sold that property for $400,000, which he did, and then he gave it to his brother and sister. But he had that money, and he still had his muffler business, which was a successful business. So it's like, what... Who's fucked you over? Only you. Only you, Marv. He's such an asshole. He's such a dickhead. God.
And, like, the documentary pits him as, like, the hero in this picture because of... Only because he's the first voice you hear and you kind of empathize with his manifesto and you don't necessarily realize that that's what it is until about like halfway through the movie. You're like, oh shit, I've been listening to a madman's raving for the last 30 minutes.
And I'm not saying this tribal council in this small town weren't fucking him over.
Right.
I'm sure they did try to do some things that were annoying or whatever or got under his skin. But like I said, he had so many ways to get out of it. He only chose spite. He chose, like, I don't want to work with these people because they rubbed me the wrong way. Even if they didn't realize that's what was going on. Because, like, sometimes people's perceptions of, like, an interaction are totally different than what you're thinking. Like, I thought this was fine. And he was like, these people are trying to kill me.
He had a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, he even treated the fucking lady who takes the checks for the city terribly.
Yeah. And then when you say that you're like a patriot and that, you know, like God's on your side and all this other stupid shit, it just makes me not believe your case even more because you're just like fishing for ways to justify your bad behavior when you should just take responsibility for your own actions like a man. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Like whenever I leave like a real mean steamer in the bathroom, you know, and it just fucking it hits like the rim of the bowl and it's just out of control, just spraying everywhere. I like to send a direct text to my girlfriend and let her know what I did. And I'll take a picture and I say, I take full responsibility for this explosion that I left.
I have to start doing that too.
Yeah. We're not speaking anymore, but... I'm a real patriot, so I feel like she's going to come around to it eventually. I've been really sitting in my hot tub a lot thinking about it, so we'll see how it works. Yeah, he came up with his fucking big scheme to get revenge while he was crying in a hot tub.
Oh my god.
Which is pretty amazing.
That was one of the best jokes you've come up with in a while.
Appreciate it, bud.
Oh my god.
So Dan, was there any other scene you wanted to talk about?
No, I think we covered everything. Everybody should watch this and watch it blindly. Well, I mean,
you probably can't now if you listen to this.
Everybody should watch this, but watch it objectively and don't side with anybody just yet. Like, really wait for the end of the film to make your decision on who's right and who's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I was straight up on Marv's side for a long time.
Yeah.
But that was only because the movie wanted me to.
Exactly. The movie kind of is geared to, like, you are on his side, but then you start to realize that his tape is more of, like, this crazy manifesto, and you're like, oh, shit.
It's an interesting study on how somebody can be radicalized through isolation, through, like, a victim syndrome type of a thing, where it's just, like, you're in this weird echo chamber of, like, everyone's screwing me over. Everyone hates me. Everyone's out to get me. And you're just kind of, like, stuck in this loop over and over and over again. And he put himself in a shack where it was just him and the machine he was making.
And, like, he wouldn't shower for days on end.
Like, it was the Blind Beast. You know that movie where the guy kidnaps the woman? And, like, they're trapped in that room. And... yeah, he doesn't shower. He lives in a cot there, and all he does is watch movies about, like, getting revenge Vigilantes. And all this other shit. Yeah, that Vin Diesel movie, like, vigilante shit. And he's just like, he's sniffing his own farts way too much, man. I mean, I don't know what else to say. And it's just insane. And that's the most fascinating thing about it to me, is how people can get pushed that way. And I feel like there was more going on with Marv than just this
stuff.
For sure.
Like, the documentary...
Something else was going on.
Watch it, but just understand that the documentary does not tell you the whole story. No documentary does. No. It's impossible.
But, like I said, I really wish they would have gone into more of the impact of what he did. Because they kind of make him seem like he's a cool dude for, like, a lot of it. And I don't know. So that's that. Dan, do you have any recommendations you want to talk about?
I want you to go first.
Oh, sure. Well, okay, well, I've been watching Ozarks, like I've said recently. I'm on season 2. The show's amazing. Go watch Ozarks. It's incredible. I mean...
what's it about?
Yeah. So the plot is this guy gets in with a cartel, and... one of his teammates accidentally screws over the cartel, and he's about to get killed. He's like, you know what? He talks his way out of it, saying, like, I can clean all this money that you have. I can make you, like, because they want to get the dirty money that they have and make it so that it seems legitimate. And that's kind of what his whole job was. He's like, I can do that for you really fast in a short amount of time, a ton of money, if you send me to the Ozarks. And he's like, there's no competition there. I'll be able to figure it out, blah, blah, blah. So... he's basically trapped by the mob to go take his entire family and move them immediately to the Ozarks, where he can try to clean this money before a certain amount of time, or the mob's going to kill them. And of course they meet with, like, hillbillies and, like, the local mob there, and, like, a ton of other, you know, it's like so many different aspects of it that are just out of control nuts. If you like it where it's like people get into problems and they have to talk their way out of them, or, like, figure out a problem to a situation, and it's just, like, constant stress. Like, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? It keeps building and building.
Kind of like Breaking Bad was.
Yeah. And it's just such a fun ride. And you really get to grow and love the characters. And it's so well done. And, yeah, what a great show. But anyways, The Boys, season 2, very different feel. I mean, The Boys is about, like, superheroes are bad, you know, and there's, like, a group of regular people who are trying to stop them. And it's, like, all about, like, how they're all just kind of capitalists, you know, like, making money for big corporations, and they all work for the corporations and stuff. But, like, in season 2, the epitome of, like, there's Superman in it. He is, like, the capitalists, superpower type of guy. He, like, represents all of that stuff. And he literally falls in love with a white nationalist who turns out to be, I'm kind of spoiling it, but it's pretty obvious from the get-go, an actual Nazi.
Jesus Christ.
So capitalism falls in love with fascism.
I like the imagery.
And it is so on the nose. So if you don't like that kind of stuff, it's like, okay, all right. But I like the show. It's fun. It's ridiculous. It really likes to try to shock you a lot. There's a lot of shock value. There's always, like, every episode, there's, like, a scene where, like, a guy's head explodes or, like, a dude, like, I don't know, fucks a whale or something ridiculous. It just,
Jesus Christ.
The show is out of control. But, yeah, I'm having fun with both shows.
Well, Jared, I watched an insane movie.
Ooh.
See, it's called Tread, and this guy, he's getting screwed over by a town. And
yeah?
He takes a tank and ravages the whole town. Isn't that cool?
Wow. That's really great, Dan. You know, I thought about making that joke.
Damn it. That was my, before we even recorded, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do that. No, I didn't have anything. Because, like, I've just been watching old Halloween movies and old Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They're so good.
Spoopaween stuff. I mean, Hocus Pocus is a fucking classic. What a great movie. I watched the new, damn it. I did watch some good movies. Maybe I'll talk about it next time, but I watched The Witches of Eastwick,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing with Jack Nicholson, and a bunch of other amazing actors in it. And I also watched the remake of The Witches.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. I thought the original was better, but then I also thought if you're going to watch a film like that, you should just watch Hocus Pocus and just don't even watch The Witches because it's like, whatever. The remake was not, they did some real dumb shit in that movie. Maybe I'll talk about it next week if I remember. But yeah, okay, that's the show. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you. Dan, please give us some plugs.
You can find us on Twitter at IndieFilmPod. You can find us on Instagram at IndieFilmReviewPod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. You can give us your films to be reviewed. We had a lot going in this week. Like, we had three requests in 1 week, and that's like, the numbers are increasing.
Numbers up. Number up mean good. Oh, is it my turn to talk?
People are finding us, and I'm impressed.
That's right. Yeah, we basically do no advertising for this show, so that's pretty fun. Pretty good time. Anyways, hey guys, necropodicon.com is the site that we are hosted on, and a lot of really cool podcasts on there. You should go check them out, baby girl. Like, this is one podcast called Grow Out of It, where they read short stories that people wrote when they were really young, and it's fucking hilarious because they do voices for them, and it's just like reading shitty fan fiction.
I wrote one in college. I might like reach out to them.
You have to go on that show, please, because you don't have to read the whole thing. You can just read like some of it. I wish I wrote some dumb shit so I could be on the show. Like, I almost want to write some silly shit just so I could be on the show. But yeah, that show's great. I'm also listening to Sons of the Father season 2. In season 2, it's all new characters, so it's Call of Cthulhu. But Paul, the host of the show and the host of Necropodicon, he does his own universe that he made, where it's like a lot about aliens and like sci-fi shit with Call of Cthulhu, which is cool. I like that a lot.
That's pretty cool.
And this one has a whole new cast. It's like same people on the show, but they're playing all new characters, all new thing that they're doing. So that's kind of fun. You could jump right into season 2 without having to watch any of season 1. And the episodes are like 30 minutes, like ours. So they're like little bite-sized things. You can jump in, boom, boom, boom. And consume them. Consumers, consume. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's good. I think I got like a couple episodes left. Anyways, I think we're done here, Dan.
I think so. That was a romp and a half.
That's right, baby girl. Dan, you have the final word.
The only way Catholics can stay on top is to keep their neighbor down.
In the missionary position.
That was a quote from the film, but Jared made it better.
That's right. Get fucked. Marv.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Spencer from the Roleplay Guys hopping in here for a quick bumper. As you know, the Roleplay Guys podcast is a proud member of the Necropodicon Podcast Network. This network is home to a lot of other great shows too. For example, you may be curious what a podcast sounds if it were run by an evil villain. You definitely love the show A Necessary Evil. Or maybe you really love watching indie films and you want to hear some funny dudes chat about them. Check out the Indie Film Review. What about a show that reminisces about the good old times of growing up, teasing the children that we used to be? Then check out the show Grow Out of It. The Necropodicon Network is a little Garden of Eden, producing the world with a wonderful crop of shows.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.